Rich. Good morning, everybody. So this morning, we're focusing on that Passover night after the Last Supper, when Jesus faces his fears in the Garden of Gethsemane, overwhelmed by what is to come. I think perhaps it's in this situation where we see Jesus at his most human, and perhaps for some people, therefore, more relatable. He's not teaching or performing miracles. There's no crowd around this charismatic man. We hear his agonized prayers to his Father, his submission to God's will and purposes, and eventually his strengthening and peace, even as he doesn't get the answer he asks for. So let's now go to the passage in Matthew 26, verses 36 to 46.
And this is quite an emotional reading within our theme of Jesus the overwhelmed. Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and distressed. Then he said to them, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me." And he went a little beyond them and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, "So, you men could not keep watch with me for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away again a second time and prayed, saying, "My Father, if this cannot pass away unless I drink it, your will be done." Again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. He left them again and went away and prayed a third time, saying the same thing once more. Then he came to his disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let's be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand."
Thank you, Roger. A really difficult passage, as you said at the beginning, and so full that it's not going to be possible for me here this morning, nor am I able to unpack this as completely as it could be. But just to say, Chris Halls will be doing his wonderful teaching on this on Tuesday evening with his Bible study. So let's just look at the context of what was going on at that time. This is following the Last Supper. Jesus and his disciples, his best friends, have just shared the Passover meal, the Last Supper. Men who all knew each other well, having lived together with Jesus through the last 3 years, they've traveled, slept, eaten, discussed scripture, received his teaching, been through the storms, parties, probably got on each other's nerves sometimes, and just lived through all that life has to offer. You'd think they'd know each other well. Throughout the meal, once again, Jesus is trying to make them understand that he is going to die. "The time has come," he said. "My appointed time is near. I tell you, I won't drink again from the fruit of this vine from now on until that day when I drink it anew with you in my Father's kingdom." He tells them one of them will betray him. He tells them they will all desert him this very night. He tells them he will meet them after his resurrection in Galilee. He doesn't just eat the bread and drink the wine with them. He gives them and us the gift of his body and blood in the bread and wine to commune with him and remember him in the future. There's enough hints there during that meal for them to really get it. Then some of them have been with him at the Transfiguration, in Matthew 17, we know that three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John, saw him talking with Moses and Elijah. They saw Jesus glorified. Jesus said, they even heard God's voice. Jesus said not to tell anyone what they'd seen, but I wonder if they were able to keep such a thing to themselves. They knew, and they'd seen who he was, and yet they still couldn't stay awake with him and his hour of need. Also, just prior to this, he was anointed with perfume, as we see in Matthew 26:6. Remember, the woman at Bethany had very expensive perfume used for embalming. She poured it over his head. Jesus told them, "She's preparing me for burial. You won't always have me." What were his disciples thinking? They couldn't seem to grab what was going on. So after the Last Supper, they go off to Gethsemane, and Jesus asks them to stay with him while he prays. He takes three of them, the three who were at his transfiguration, forward with him, his closest friends. We see Jesus pouring his heart out to God, begging his Father not to make him suffer, begging for another way. Every translation I've seen uses very strong words as Jesus tells it, his close friends how he's feeling. Let's have a look at some of those now. So the Passion Translation says he has an intense feeling of great sorrow, plunging his soul into deep sorrow and agony. He said to them, "My heart is overwhelmed. I'm crushed with grief. It feels as though I'm dying." I mean, that is just an impassioned speech. What a thing to tell your friends. What did they think was going on there? I wonder if his disciples had seen him like this before. We have no account that he's been like that before. They were close enough to hear his words. We know that he shouted them in his agony of grief. I wonder what else Jesus had been saying to his Father verbally or in his spirit. There's only, I think, snippets recorded here of what actually went on between Jesus and his Father. The disciples slept. Didn't they understand the enormity or imminence of Jesus' death and resurrection? Maybe they couldn't believe it would happen. Maybe they didn't believe it would happen. Maybe they expected a last-minute miraculous intervention. So what was Jesus feeling in that garden? I think he was feeling the agony of fear. He felt everything as a human being. I think I've gone on too many. There we are. I think he felt everything as a human being, that agony of fear. The fear of physical suffering, could he endure it? Did he have a fear of failure even? He knew the future of the world and mankind depended on him being willing and able to go through suffering and death, to fight to overcome Satan and save mankind, even though he might then be rejected, his sacrificial death and saving as nothing. Fear of the unknown. The pain of isolation, I'm sure he felt that, as he knew he couldn't go through this with his family and friends. He had to do it alone. They couldn't support him. And worst of all, he knew there would be a time when the Father couldn't look on him or be with him as he took on the sin and evil of the world on the cross. He felt the pain of betrayal by a close friend. How awful it is. How awful it is when we're let down by someone we love, someone we trust. Although Jesus knew it was necessary to fulfill the scriptures, humanly speaking, it was another unbearable aspect of his suffering. I think also he felt the deep sorrow for the plight of mankind, past, present, and future. In other words, he was absolutely, utterly overwhelmed. So in that garden, we see that Jesus was honest about his feelings, his thoughts, his fears. Three times he begged if it was possible, could he not do this? Was there another way? Please, please let this cup go away. But not what I want, what you want. Let your will be done. He had unanswered prayer. God's own son was refused. In Hebrews 5:7, we read, Jesus offered up prayers and supplication with loud cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. And he was heard because of his reverent submission. Heard, but not answered. We can be very close to God. And I think this shows that, doesn't it? Who could be closer to God than Jesus, but not get what we ask for? Just taking a quote from Chris's presentation on Tuesday, where he says, this is a profound mystery before which we must bow. Jesus was able to come to a point where he was strengthened and could trust God to sustain him through the dreadful battle and suffering that was to come, so that God's purposes for mankind could be achieved and Satan and all evil could be defeated once and for all. Jesus knew he had an appointed time to suffer and die. This was his mission. Yet he still had to face the reality. I don't want to diminish what Jesus went through in Gethsemane, but you know that feeling of when you're going to the dentist, you know you've got an appointment, but as it gets closer, you really have to face up to what you might be going to experience. And in a much more overwhelming way, Jesus, I think, as a human being, although he'd known this was his mission, he had to face that reality. For us, life is unpredictable and very painful at times. And I wonder, have you ever felt overwhelmed? I know I have. How did it make you feel physically, emotionally, spiritually? What did you do? Did you come to a point where you could trust God for the outcome? I know there was a time for me when I was in China and I was totally overwhelmed, probably exhausted, but there was lots going on and I really, really was totally overwhelmed. And I took myself off to a place where I could spend a couple of days in a sort of retreat. And at the end of that time, God was very good to me. He brought me out into a place where I knew that whatever the outcome of this situation, I knew deep in my heart, deep in my spirit, that I would be okay, that I would cope, that it would be all right, whether my prayers were answered the way I hoped they would be or not, it would be okay. Why don't you take a few moments now to reflect on your experience or experience of somebody you know, if you haven't had that experience, and just think about those questions. How did you feel physically, emotionally, spiritually? What did you do or what are you doing? Did you come to a point where you could trust God for the outcome? I'm going to stop talking for a moment while you have a thought about that. So there are many, many references in the Bible which we could draw on, those promises, those places where we hear God speaking through others to us about that feeling of being overwhelmed. And I've just put a few or three here now. And in Psalm 18, it says, he reached down on high and drew me out of deep waters. But the Lord was my support. He rescued me because he delighted in me. What a promise that is. He rescued because he loved me. He delights in me. And then in Psalm 42, the psalmist says, my deep need calls out to the deep kindness of your love, that you hear it coming from his heart. Your waterfall of weeping sent waves of sorrow over my soul, carrying me away, cascading over me like a thundering cataract. Yet all day long, God's promises of love pour over me. Through the night, I sing his songs. So there we see this impassioned description of how the psalmist was feeling at the time. And then he goes on to ask, why must I suffer? Why, God? I depend on you. How could you forget me? So all those real feelings coming out to God as he cries out his in a truthful, in an honest way, just as Jesus did in the Garden of Gethsemane. And then I love this promise in Isaiah 43 too. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. So again, talking of almost being drowned, overwhelmed. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. So promises that we must hold on to in those times and maybe meditate on. Also, another thing pinched from Chris. This is Tom Smale in his book, The Forgotten Father. This is who Jesus is talking to. This is who he knows. The father that Jesus addresses in the garden is the one that he's known all his life and found to be bountiful in his provision and utterly faithful in his love. This is the father Jesus knew. He can obey the will that sends him to the cross with hope and expectation because it's the will of Abba, whose love has been so proved that it can now be trusted so fully by being obeyed so completely. This isn't legal obedience driven by commandment, but a trusting response to the love he knows, to known love. Wow, what a place to be in. So what can we see from Jesus's experience that, what can we learn? Prayer is necessary. So when the hard times seem intolerable, when the most crucial and demanding action in the world's history was about to happen, it had to be rooted in prayer. Jesus knew it was essential. Prayer is to be shared. Jesus longed for the encouragement of sharing this prayer time with his disciples, but they were too tired. They failed him. He had promised that where two or three come together in my name, there I am with them. Chapter 18, verse 20 of Matthew. But when he himself needed them, no two or three were there to be found. Prayer is to be repeated. Jesus himself prays three times for the same thing. He prayed that the cup of suffering which he saw awaiting him might be taken away. This prayer isn't like the many words of the pagans who keep on babbling. Such repetition is condemned in chapter 6, verse 7. To keep on praying indicates that it determination, confidence, and it demonstrates a seriousness that's a vital part of intercessory prayer. I wonder how many times we've prayed and prayed and then just given up and thinking, well, that's God's not hearing that. And yet we see here in the garden, God does hear. God does answer, not always the way that we want him to. So maybe today, like me, you will have many unanswered prayers. How do you cope with that? Do you keep praying or do you just give up? Maybe you're feeling overwhelmed at this time, and I wouldn't blame you. There's so much going on and has gone on around the world and in our own lives. We face those unpredictable times. You have the leaves in front of you. And I wonder whether you would like to take the opportunity maybe to write down some of your unanswered prayers again. Maybe you're overwhelmed feeling. What are you facing at the moment? Use your leaves. Rich will show you in a minute how to maybe put them on the tree that's been prepared. Thank you for listening, and I hope that we're able now to carry on and just commit all of that to God with the example of his wonderful son, Jesus. back over to you.